Leaning Toward Wisdom, episode 5030. Sounds like it ought to be the soundtrack to a 1960s comedy, doesn't it? My name's Randy Cantrell. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My tired coat of armor been wearing thin, and it shows. Coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, it is a reasonably stormy Monday morning, June the 24th, 2019. I intended to do this recording over the weekend, but didn't get around to it. I would give you all kinds of excuses, but none of them are going to matter. I promise you, I am working. I'm trying diligently to get back into some kind of a weekly routine. It's probably not going to happen until after the summer is over. So I'll give you that warning. Hey, thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. I'll give you one call to action. Join the Facebook group if you care. Private closed Facebook group. Just visit the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. Click the Facebook icon. The title of today's show is a lyric. It's from the newest Jamestown Revival record. The title of the record is San Isabel. San Isabel. The song is This Too Shall Pass. In a prior life, I would have played it for you, but I'm embedding the video of it from YouTube over at the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com, episode 5030. My tired coat of armor been wearing thin, and it shows. For those of you that are interested, and some of you are, here's some music that I'm listening to at the moment. I used to try to keep a Spotify list kind of going, but not so much. In addition to this new Jamestown Revival record, of course, I am listening to a 2018 record by The Hunts called Darlin' Oh Darlin'. I talked to the Facebook group. I mentioned the title of this record. You know, it's one of those things where you kind of, sometimes I confess, I'm pretty sure this was the first thing that I bought when it came out in 2013, The Hollering Pines. Well, the title of the group got me, The Hollering Pines. I mean, how can you not like that? But the title of the record was really substantial. Long Nights, Short Lives, and Spilled Chances. Long Nights, Short Lives, and Spilled Chances. I love it. The most recent release by Dylan LeBlanc, that's kind of in the listening queue as well. The Bones of J.R. Jones. It's a new record. It simply is called The Bones of J.R. Jones. That's his name. That's his stage name. His real name is Jonathan Robert Lineberry. Yeah, he performs under the guise of The Bones of J.R. Jones. Why not? Ricky Lee Jones, her new one, Kicks. It's growing on me. Wolves, a 2015 record by a group called American Aquarium. Gotta love that. A local girl, Kylie Rae Harris. She has an EP out, came out this year. Simply call Kylie Rae Harris. And, of course, I'm listening to all the usual suspects as well. Mandolin Orange, they're still always a big player. Anderson East, Jade Bird, James Morrison, Josh Ritter. Just so much good music. Music, and solitude. These go hand in hand for me. And writing. And sometimes drawing, which, frankly, would more closely resemble doodling these days. All this listening to music violates the true meaning, at least what we're told, the true meaning of solitude. Solitude is defined by psychology in a way that I'm not real fond of. Solitude is the state of being alone without being lonely. Not for me, it's not. The authors of a book entitled Lead Yourself First, they give a more detailed definition that I rather like. Solitude is a state of mind, a space where you can focus on your own thoughts without distraction, with a power to bring mind and soul together in clear-eyed conviction. You like that? Simply put, freedom from distraction, but it's deeper than that. obviously, to focus your own thoughts without distraction, with a power to bring mind and soul together in clear-eyed conviction. As much as I love it, I'm not going to tell you that I'm gifted at being able to pull that off. Technically, listening to music violates even that definition, I suppose. It doesn't matter. I count it anyway. Lyrics and melodies, these provoke thoughts. I just kind of consider those things positive distractions. It feeds my solitude. It is part of rest, restoration, and rejuvenation. Well, let's talk about this coat of armor. We all have one because we all need one every now and again. Truthfully, I think we need one more often than not, sort of like being fully clothed. You know, we spend most of our time being fully clothed. Okay, I'm not going to get into a modesty debate just here, but you know what I mean. I mean, not many people see me running around in my boxers and a t-shirt. It's a select few, select lucky few. And so it is with exposing ourselves sans armor. It's just not safe. It is just not safe most of the time. So you have to protect yourself. And armor is protection. You're likely thinking of some type of armor. Maybe you're thinking about the armor worn by knights in the medieval days. Maybe you're thinking about the body armor that's worn by today's soldiers or law enforcement officers. Here in Texas, you could even be thinking about a certain critter that kind of typifies our state, the armadillo. We need armor. We need armor to protect against attacks from people intending to harm us, and even sometimes from people who necessarily don't intend to harm us. But armor can also signify resilience, our ability to protect ourselves against adversity. Those could be circumstances, events, people, situations. And it's not bad. It's necessary. And it is part of how we all must live our lives. So let me talk a little bit about introversion versus extroversion. Of all the personality traits, these two seem to be the most talked about. They appear to me to be the biggest elephants in the room, often used to describe ourselves and other people. Well, he's an introvert. He's an extrovert. I can only speak to my own introversion, which is part of my armor, just like an extrovert deploys that quality as part of her armor. My introversion appears quite frequently like extroversion. Somebody smarter than me is going to have to explain this. My way of looking at it is based on my internal energy. When my armor is weakened, I retreat. It's the way that I can refuel. It's the way that I can attempt to fortify myself. Attempt being the operative word. I suspect, I can't relate because I'm not one, I suspect extroverts do the opposite. When their armor is weakened, they likely seek the company of others in an effort to recharge and renew strength. Well, that just indicates the individual nature of our armor. Whatever characteristics and whatever qualities make up our armor, they are largely individual to us. And yes, it's true that we are much more alike than not, but these subtle nuances of our personalities, these real subtle differences that make you you and that make me me, it's what makes us who we are. In medieval days, a big part of the armor was the shield, and you could judge a knight by his shield. It was a primary identifier. I mean, for whom is this knight fighting? Who and what does he represent? Where is he from? Our armor, including whatever we use as a shield, does the same thing for us. Who are you? Where are you from? What do you represent? What are you fighting for? All of this is identified by the armor that we bear. Well, the big question is protecting us from what? I don't make any argument against our need to protect ourselves. Quite the opposite. Of course we need to. The question is, from what? Well, there are a litany of things. Hurt, pain, suffering, embarrassment, shame, defeat, love, intimacy, commitment. Some would even say success. Fears, both universal and individual, impact us unlike anything else. From paralysis to diving off the deep end without looking. I mean, our fears propel us toward foolishness, delusion, and they can oftentimes put our feet in cement all at the same time. Wrangling fear is really hard work. Wrangling fear probably is the work. Worthwhile, but really hard. When we are able to harness appropriate fear, I mean, people that, there used to be a brand that was really big. I don't know what happened to them. I need to do some research. No fear. I was coaching teenagers in hockey, and I mean, it was all the rage of teenagers at the time. And I'm going back to, I don't know when this was. This was, you know, back in the late 80s, maybe early 90s. No fear. No fear. I think I've even got a few hats left. Well, no fear is probably a really foolish, stupid way to go through life. There are some things you better be afraid of. Because if you're not, you won't protect yourself as you should. So we need to be able to harness the appropriate kind of fear and an appropriate level of fear. And if we do that, it can catapult us toward wisdom. But when we don't, or when we can't, man alive, it shoves us down the whitewater rapids of foolishness faster than anything you can name. And people get really stupid really quickly because they don't have an appropriate level of fear. But there's all that inappropriate. There's all that inaccurate fear. There's all this false fear based on our false assumptions, maybe based on our beliefs, based on our disbelief. Mostly, I think about ourselves and mostly about what we think is possible for us or by us. And then, of course, there's anxiety. I mean, we can't leave out poor anxiety, like anxiety doesn't get enough press these days. I mean, my lands, anxiety is at the forefront of press. Talk about a press hog. Anxiety is the press hog. Anxiety is the Kardashian of human feelings and emotions. It's often as formidable a foe as fear, for some even more so. Here's how it's defined. A feeling of worry, nervousness, or unease, typically about an imminent event or something with an uncertain outcome. Well, la-di-da, doesn't that just encapsulate nearly everything? I mean, how many things in your life, how many things do you venture out to do, and they don't have a very certain outcome? Maybe they've got a predictable outcome. Maybe they've got an outcome that it certainly is an outcome that you hope for, and one that you may think is even probable, but it's not a deadlock. It's not certain. Well, no wonder we've got so much anxiety. Protecting vital organs with body armor, well, and one skull with a helmet, that's included in the armor. It's easier, it's more effective than whatever armor we could deploy to protect our minds and, well, synonymously, our hearts. I don't know why this is, but I suppose that I could armor up. I could go get a helmet, face shield, all kinds of protection to protect my physical self. I kind of, depending on what the activity would be or what the battle would be, I'd kind of know what to do. The problem is when you need to protect the real vital thing that you need to protect, which is your mind, I do, okay. The armor store doesn't have anything. There's nothing on the rack that I can pick up to do that. During the 1960s, the United States failed to engage in a hearts and minds campaign in Vietnam. And in 1974, there was a famous documentary of that war bearing the same title, Hearts and Minds. The notion is that it's more effective to win over an opponent with intellectual and emotional appeal than to try to merely subdue them with physical or military strength. Well, that did not happen for the United States in Vietnam. Brute force, mass bombings did not work. And that war was a catastrophic failure. What about your heart and mind? How might you protect them from your own devices or the devices of others? And when your armor gets tired and when it is wearing thin, can you fortify it? Or does it just fail, never to be returned to some more effective protective state? Here's the thing, now that I'm a few minutes into the podcast, here's the lead. You ready for the lead? Here's the thing about heart and mind protection. The question is the answer. Our best, in fact, our only armor, our only protection is our heart and mind. There is simply no other protection available. What we think and what we feel are everything. Spiritually and morally, I was always encouraged to, quote, guard your heart. Guard your heart. I heard it all the while I was growing up. And I knew that it meant to lean on my faith, lean on the truth of God's word to protect myself from the various temptations and behaviors that might rob me of my faith, might cause me to behave poorly. Philippians chapter 4, verse 7, and the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall guard your hearts and your thoughts in Christ Jesus. I'm sure I'm going to butcher his name. I think it is pronounced Shael Sonnen. Shael Sonnen. I don't know where he's from, but he is an MMA commentator, and he tells a story. I'm going to embed this over at the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com, episode 5030. It's a little two-minute segment where he tells the story about boxing and mixed martial arts bouts and how they began to use the pre-fight instruction that you hear every referee begin a fight with by telling both combatants, protect yourself at all times. It seems, if we can believe the video, and I do, that this was born in an Olympic bout. These boxers are in rings, and there's three rings that are going on simultaneously. And one fighter who is clearly winning this bout handily hears a bell. Problem? The bell is not for his ring. It's for somebody else's fight. And he lowers his hands and gets knocked out. Loses the fight. Goes to judges and people, you know, because he heard a bell. Problem? The bell wasn't for you. You stopped. And so hence was born the advice, you need to protect yourself at all times. Our coat of armor is dependent on us, period. We are responsible to protect ourselves at all times. It doesn't matter if we hear a bell. It doesn't matter if we don't hear a bell. It doesn't matter if the opponent stops swinging at us or if the opponent is momentarily out of sight. Protect yourself at all times, because if you don't, you're liable to get knocked out. A coat of armor can become fatigued, resulting in, well, less protection. Duh. It makes us susceptible to blows, even if we're trying to protect ourselves at all times. Because, okay, the armor could give. I mean, forget about trying harder. And what does that even mean? And how do you do it? A wiser strategy is to shore up the armor's weak spots, or maybe better yet, just, okay, can I ditch this whole armor and get new armor? So let's talk a bit here about armor. I mean, what does our protection look like? What exactly is it? Because until we know that, how can we know how to shore it up or possibly replace it? We're living in a world, thanks to the internet, with a lot of empty advice. Things like, this is a quote. I am reading this, and I'm reading this from a respected psychology website. Are you ready for it? Because brace yourself, because the wisdom is going to overwhelm you. Here it is. I'm quoting. Don't allow someone to affect your moods, thoughts, preferences, opinions, or plans. Do you get it? Don't allow someone to affect your moods, thoughts, preferences, opinions, or plans. Whoa. My lens. There you go. There's the show. Good night, everybody. I mean, it's great advice if you know how to do it. Empty advice for the millions of us who have no idea. What do you mean don't allow? How? Well, we're not going to tell you that. And before you think that I'm here to offer some wisdom previously unknown to all mankind, just hold your horses. I'm not that smart. I'm certainly not that wise or creative. I'm thoughtful. I'm mindful. I'm forgiving. I'm compassionate. This is insanely difficult work, and therapists worldwide have their calendars jam-packed with people seeking professional help to figure these things out for themselves. Nothing is more complex than our mind. Nothing is more powerful to help us than our mind. Nothing is more powerful to destroy us than our own mind. And nothing is more difficult to manage or control than our mind. Well, if that's the case, and I believe that it is, then should we just throw up our hands and our breakfast and start waving a white flag of surrender? Hardly. You know me, I'm optimistic. It beats pessimism all to pieces. We should assume the aggressive yet protective stance of a ninja warrior. That's kind of a nice thought, isn't it? I don't know, maybe you're into comic book heroes. Pick the comic book hero you admire most. My youngest grandson loves Spider-Man, so if he were old enough to even understand this conversation, I can promise you he would be Spider-Man. Maybe you want to be Spider-Man. If that's your thing, go for it. I might envision myself as one of the Knights of the Round Table in King Arthur's court. Probably not the Dark Knight of Monty Python's Quest for the Holy Grail. You remember that knight? I mean, you got to admire his tenacity in the face of brutal adversity. I'll embed that. That scene's worth that scene's worth watching again. Maybe that depiction is too aggressive. I mean, is it too offensive and not defensive enough to suit you? Could be, but maybe there's some truth in that that can help us. Because we think of armor or protection as defensive, and it is. But for what end? Do we protect ourselves to simply survive? Or are we protecting ourselves so that we can fight back successfully? Are we trying to win, or are we just trying to withstand the attack? The other day, I'm on my walk, and as I was coming back home, I mean, just teetering on the curb, about to go into the street, was a rather large turtle. I would say from side to side, 10 inches. Good-sized turtle. And of course, the minute I approached him, he went into his shell. He's got great protection. He's not fighting back. He's a turtle. And I guess we could approach life like a turtle. It's why turtle is often used as a verb. We withdraw and we go into our shell. We're waiting for this moment to end. But we're really not attacking. We're not fighting. So I think this all depends on who you are and how you choose to live. And I'm not telling you what to do. It's your life. You decide. I think some people are like that turtle. They're just willing to endure and to withstand. I picked him up, by the way, and I put him very safely away from the road back toward a creek from whence I knew he had come. Other people, you know, they just feel victorious, kind of like the turtle. They just weathered the storm, and that's good enough. That's a victory. Forget counterpunching. I just want to hide and wait until this attack is over, and that'll be victory. You know, that would be an effective strategy. Maybe if we just had to endure one attack, or if it really weren't an attack, like I was not attacking the turtle, but the turtle had no idea. He knew that somebody else was in control of him at this point. So I'm sure he's a turtle, so I doubt he was terrified. But if he had human emotions, he would have most certainly been terrified of me. I'm sure of it. But the attack was over. I placed him down very safely and hopefully he was happy. So the turtle strategy could be effective if we just, you know, if we had to endure something like that. Or maybe even if the attack were real, but we just had them every now and again. The problem is life isn't that kind. What I did for the turtle, life doesn't do for us. Not very often. It's why I'm doing the whole craving encouragement project. We all need it. We all love it. We all want it. We all crave it. And yet we don't do it. It baffles me. I don't know why we don't do it. Well, I do know why. We don't think about it. We're living our lives. We're busy. I get it. Life isn't kind, by and large. And attacks continue, and mostly they are ongoing, which means, in my personal view, we must fight back or be killed. Well, metaphorically, of course. Well, actually, realistically, I guess we could be killed because there are attacks that can kill us. I'm thinking of illness, injury, abuse. It's the ugly, deadly side of attacks and attackers. They come from everywhere, and they can be anything. They can be physical. They can be mental. They can be emotional. They can be spiritual. Back to our armor and its purpose. I think of it in three stages, even though it's really just a two-step process where step one becomes step three. So if you just think of it, it's kind of like it's a cycle is what it is, but there's only two steps in the cycle. There's step one, which goes to step two, which goes back around to step one. The podcast title is Leaning Toward Wisdom. And so it implies forward progress toward wisdom. I mean, that's what we're here for. And that means if we don't advance, well, if we don't advance, we're not progressing. We're not leaning toward wisdom. And if we're not leaning toward wisdom, then you know what that means. We're leaning toward foolishness. So let's talk about step one, endurance, survival. You got to live long enough. I mean, it is priority one. You don't know when you'll be attacked, not always. And nor do you always know what or who will attack or with what they will attack, which means you have to always be prepared. But for what? Well, to sustain an attack of any kind, for any endurance, for any period of time, of any intensity. Well, that's a tall order. Yes, it is. It's a very tall order. Welcome to life. Doesn't mean you'll survive, but preparing to survive certainly improves the odds. When I was coaching some hockey, I would intently focus the teams on making sure that we accomplished just one thing, be tough to play against. Translation, make it really hard on the opponent. Be brutally tough to play against. That's what we have to guard ourselves in fighting this adversity. We have got to be really tough to play against. We have got to make it really hard on adversity. You know, too often we just wilt under light pressure. And that just doesn't give us any chance at all to thrive. Nature illustrates it. Seeds endure some form of death. You plant a seed in the ground, it's basically has to die before it's going to sprout bigger, grander creations. All creatures, large and small, struggle to be born so that life can begin this long journey of resistance against all the threats on life. Logically, we all understand the value of overcoming adversity. And the magic isn't in the adversity. That's where too many people get it wrong. The magic is our growth as we figure out how to endure and overcome adversity. Because from our struggles emerges our strength. A strength that we could never build, we could never increase without the pressure of the challenge. And so these attacks on life, our life, they make us strong enough to move forward and hopefully to become more than we ever would have otherwise. I go to the gym and it's pretty interesting to me. And I've talked a little bit about this before, but there's a group of guys, and it's the same guys. And these are not your 20 or 30 something ripped hard bodies. These are middle-aged or older kind of guys. And they'll go to the gym and they're there all the time. And they can be there for 90 minutes to 2 hours. And I've never seen them lift a single weight, get on a single machine. Never seen them do anything. And some of these guys have been going to the gym for years and years. And I think about them, and I'm sure they can go home and they can tell their friends or their wives or whomever, I go to the gym 5 times a week, a couple of hours a day. And if those friends or family are like me, I'd be, you look at these characters and you're like, really? Because you look like the same fat lard that you were 10 years ago to me, but what do I know? Well, here's what you don't know. They're not doing anything. They're not answering any challenge at all. They're not answering any physical adversity at all. They're socializing. Pity the poor person who's trying to get a workout in because they just migrate from machine to machine to machine, from station to station to station, visiting the poor person who's trying to get a workout in. It's great. It's fine. I don't judge it. They can do what they want to do. It's just kind of interesting to me. Here's the point. There's no benefit. They don't benefit. Go to the gym. Yeah, I go to the gym. I go to the gym 10 hours a week. That's great. That's wonderful. But you're not doing anything. You're not fighting the fight. You're not dealing with resistance. So the benefit? Well, the benefit is they get to socialize. I'm not saying there's no benefit, but there's no gym benefit. Put it that way. Part of the game, this whole living game, is to stay alive long enough to figure out how to become stronger and how to better fight the adversity in our life. To do this long enough to become stronger, not like these old cats at the gym. Tired doesn't mean weak. Weariness is not equal to defeat, because gyms all over the world are filled with strong, fit people who are striving to get more so, and they are filled with folks like these fellows I mentioned that are not so fit. And they're not so strong. And, well, they're not striving to improve. They're just striving to improve their social life. But there are also some other people. And I'm real sympathetic to these people because I can relate to these people. These are my people. The people that they've got some paunch, but they're there. They're there. They're putting in the work. Now, they may be, grabbing a sack of Big Macs on the way home, for all I know. But the process isn't laugh-out-loud fun. It's just not. This going to the gym stuff, this working out, this battling resistance is not just ha-ha glee. It's often dreary, dreaded. You know why people do it? People do it to get results. People that put in the work do it for the results. Firmer bodies, stronger muscles, lower body fat. In a word, fit. They do it to become more fit. Okay, well, fit for what? Well, that depends. I'm sure I could go interview any 10 random guys and gals at the gym where I go, and I'm sure I could get a variety of different answers. Some of them would probably likely be very similar. Fit for clothes. Fit for a love connection. Fit for health improvements. All of the above. And, people have their reasons. And just like we all have our reasons for wanting to endure and survive, we don't want to live to fight another day. We want to live to fight today and tomorrow. and the day after tomorrow. When the bullets start flying, we want to avoid being hurt. Walking away tired and exhausted, but unhurt? Man, that's the ideal. When my kids were teens, especially when they started driving, I would constantly encourage them to be safe. Be safe. Be careful. Repeatedly, I would tell them, I know you're going to make mistakes. I just don't want you to make a mistake from which you cannot recover. And so it goes with our self-protection. If our adversity wrecks us completely, if it kills us, if it damages us to the point where we can't recover, game's over. And it happens all the time. It happens all the time to millions of people who can't figure out how to endure the challenges of the day. So they quit. They give up. They just resign that success is never going to happen for them. I mean, why do you think failure is so prominent? Because the hordes of people follow failure. You know, mostly we want our adversity to be, well, not so adverse. In fact, our preference would be to walk away unscathed, not even winded. We'd rather not even break a sweat. Kind of like those old men at the gym. We want it to be that easy, that easy. I don't even want my heart to race. The problem is that's not profitable. There's no benefit from that. We don't learn anything from it. I mean, it's tantamount to trying to get fit by laying on the couch and eating ho-hos. Ho-hos. And there's a blast from the past. We don't learn anything from it. Our mental, emotional, and psychological muscles don't grow. Our fitness level doesn't improve at all. We need adversity. We just need to handle it so that we're not permanently injured or killed by it. And we need to endure it long enough so that we can get to some point of rest and recovery. But quite frankly, don't we also need to exert ourselves so that we need rest and recovery? When I go to the gym and I really push it, and I don't do that because I'm not stupid. I'm old. I'm not stupid. So I don't overly do it. But there, you want to get to a point where you're pretty exhausted, right? I mean, you want to push it a little bit. It's not going to do any good to do weights that are just super easy. No problem at all. You know, I could crank out 100 of these. That doesn't do any good. You know, you pile a few more weights on each end of the bar and you give it a go. And yeah, that's a little tougher, but I think I can do more. And you pile a little bit more on and a little bit more. And okay, now I'm getting to the point I can tell. I can tell I'm hitting fatigue. Even the most idiotic of us, my hands are in the air. When it comes to fitness knowledge, no. This is the point you have to get to, not for injury, but to kind of exhaust yourself. And then what do? You rest. You rest. You give yourself a few moments, you recover before you pick it up again. Not all fights are the same. Some of them are fast and they're over with in a hurry. I'm thinking of this little video that it's been around for a few years. You know, there's this long-haired galoot, and it's a bunch of people, and they have kind of formed this human ring, and there's some kind of a referee, an announcer. I have no idea what this thing is. It's some kind of a mixed martial arts thing, and the guy with the long hair, he's doing flips, and he's doing cartwheels, and, I mean, he's kicking in the air, and he's doing all kinds of stuff, and the other guy, he's just standing there with his arms to his side, not doing anything, and the bout starts, and the guy with the long hair, he's kicking, he's swinging, he's doing just all of these super cool, terrific movie stunt kind of maneuvers, and the other guy just walks up to him and jacks him one time in the jaw, and he's out. I mean, fight's over. Some are like that, you know, fast and over with in a hurry. Others, they're not like that at all. I remember when mixed martial arts first came out, Ryan, my son, was, I don't know, middle school, and he and a buddy were over, and you had to rent these things. And so you rent the VHS, right? I mean, forget DVDs, it's VHS. And these bouts had no time limit. And I remember one with Hoist Gracie, you know, famous Brazilian jiu-jitsu family. This thing went on and on and on and on and on. I mean, it was just like, is this fight ever going to end? Well, sometimes that's how adversity is. Some of them feel like we're battling thousands and thousands of people. And others, it's like there is a lone sniper somewhere. He's taking shots at us. He clearly can see me. I can't see him. Some of them are up close, kind of like a knife fight. I mean, there's going to be blood. Others, they're more long distance. Kind of like a drone attack. It's kind of like, okay, somewhere like about 3,000 feet, there's something that sees me. I have no idea. I see nothing. None of these attacks are comfortable. No adversity is comfortable. And all of them are threatening. Be tough to compete against. Just refuse to stop. Don't quit. I'm really not sure that much else matters. I'm truly not. I mean, all these fighting details, all these tactics, all these strategies, do they matter? Okay, maybe. I mean, it's a little bit like the long-haired galoot that I described. I mean, you can, okay, you know how to do all the spinning kicks. That's great. It's wonderful. But you leave your jaw unprotected and the guy comes up and he just jacks you on. It would be dishonest to say that tactics and strategies don't matter at all, because the guy that used the one punch, there was a strategy. I'm just going to wait until this cat, you know, he spins around and he's going to leave his chin exposed and then I'm going to hit him. It was a strategy. It wasn't nearly as fancy as the other guys, but it was far more effective. Funny even. The question is, do these strategies, do these tactics make a difference between winning and losing? I don't know. I'm not sure. I really am not. Because rather, I think a person's hard-headedness. Yeah, okay. I know that you want a more positive word than that. So let's use resolve. A person's resolve is the real power of endurance. Navy SEAL training, I'm told, involves a very simple device. 10% of the training candidates, and there are 200 men at the beginning, but 10% graduate. The rest accept an invitation that is available to all 200 men from the beginning. And that invitation is simply this. When you've had enough, walk over to that bell and ring it. Ringing the bell signifies, I'm out, I quit, I'm done. The men who would be SEALs aren't men who quit. That's precisely the whole point of the training. The U.S. Navy needs to find out, for people to be in their elite fighting squad known as the SEALs, they need to know who refuses to quit. I would imagine if there were some kind of an assessment that they could give candidates that would be foolproof, they would maybe employ that, but there isn't. Now, keep in mind, every candidate is already a talented sailor, nominated, put forth to enter this program. They are all, and I'm sure that all of the commanders in the SEALs would say, every single sailor who comes into the program is capable of learning whatever needs to be learned, doing whatever must be done, and graduating. They all have the capability. What the U.S. Navy does not know is how resilient are they? How hard-headed are they? Which is why the training is critical. Who among the 200 is going to refuse to ring the bell, no matter what? The only way to get the answer? Put them through the training. Adversity. Adversity in life does the exact same thing, except we don't have any bell to ring. We can't go ring a bell and say, okay, life, stop. I've had enough. Right? Leave me alone. Because life just keeps on beating you whether you want it or not. And life doesn't care if you want to quit. Did you get that? Life does not care if you want to quit. Wait a minute. What? You heard me. Life keeps on beating you no matter what. Here's the punchline. I know you've been spinning around with all these fancy kicks and stuff, and I'm fixing to just lay a right hook right on your chin. You ready for it? Why quit? Why quit? It's not going to spare you anything. It will not make the beating stop. It will not make the adversity go away. All it means is you're just going to stop fighting, and you're going to get weaker, and you're going to get weaker, and you're going to get more injured along the way. So what does this mean? It means that adversity's impact is limited or limitless. And here's the real power. Here's the real takeaway. You get to decide. The adversity in your life has limitations or has no limitations. It's completely up to you. Yes, people die. Sometimes it cannot be stopped. I know countless people who announce, and you do too, who have announced in times past that they've been diagnosed with some awful disease. And then as quickly as they announce it, they're announcing how they're going to be tough and they're going to fight it and they're going to beat it. I understand. I get the rhetoric. But then they don't. They don't beat it, because brave speech is easy. In fact, unreasonable brave speech may even be more easy. Your physical life can be taken. Some adversity can take your physical life. And maybe the best that we can hope for under some dire circumstances is to manage our life as best we can, so that we can manage how we exit. And even that's not always possible. Death robs people of dignity. Disease robs us of dignity. So what do? Well, you endure just as long as you can. And thankfully, most adversity won't eat us. It'll try to gum you to death. It gets down to pain tolerance. It gets down to discomfort tolerance. It really boils down to that. It really boils down to not letting discomfort or pain discourage us. Our ability to live with it until we can find time to rest, recuperate, and restore our energy. We're to step two. Advance. Push forward. We need energy to succeed. The only way to get it is by enduring the adversity that understandably may be making your armor thin. That's how we thicken the armor. Armor that shows the tiredness of being in battle has proven its ability to do the job. Now, human armor is very different. Human armor has an ability that is not available to a knight or to a soldier or to a law enforcement officer. Human armor improves and is strengthened through adversity. Armor that shows thinness and tiredness simply means one thing. The armor needs rest. The armor needs restoration. The armor needs rejuvenation. It does not mean the fight is over. That battle, that skirmish may be over. And it certainly doesn't mean that the armor is finished. And there's another buried lead that I'm so known for in the podcast. When you're feeling most discouraged, when you are feeling the least resilient, when you are feeling unable or maybe unwilling to fight anymore, it simply is a signal. And what is the signal? Well, the signal is one that you cannot, must not ignore. I'll give you four words. They all mean the same thing. Rest, restore, recuperate, rejuvenate. These are individual pursuits. And these are precisely the activities where most successful people excel. And I'm not talking about wealth building. I'm talking about people who achieve what they most want to achieve. The achievers in life figure out the best way to rest, restore, recuperate, rejuvenate, so they can advance past the adversity. And figuring out how to rest and how to restore, man, that's only half the battle. Because the other half's doing it. I'll pick on myself as an example because, well, that's more polite than picking on you. Physical rest is not easy for me. My entire life has consisted of catnapping. My circadian rhythm has been weirdly abnormal my entire life. I cannot remember a time when it wasn't. When I was young, I would struggle to fall asleep and to stay asleep. Now I don't struggle so much to fall asleep, but staying asleep, yeah, that still evades me. You can almost set your stopwatch to 90 minutes. I'll fall asleep, and within 90 minutes, almost to the minute, and I'm talking regularly, I'm awake. Some nights, that's it. I'm awake, I'm done, that's it. Other nights, I'll get up for hours and hours, and then I may repeat that 90-minute cycle. More often than not, that's what happens. Stress and adversity can disrupt that even further. And I know with absolute certainty that I need to rest. I know when my armor is wearing thin. I will notice it long before others do. Because I just do. My goal is to find restoration before it shows. Again, I'm telling on myself here. I don't always do that. And I don't always work as diligently as I should to mask it like I used to. In fact, these days I will confide in a few people. I'm struggling. And I don't hide it as well as I once did. You know, age and all that, right? Yeah, I'm not as sharp as I used to be. It's not like I was sharp to begin with. Sharp as a bowling ball. But, you know, knowing these things about myself isn't tantamount to doing much about it. That's a whole different deal. Now, of course, it depends on the adversity. I joked with a friend recently that my life decided to wait until I was older and already kind of tired before the real deep adversity would hit me. That's how life goes, right? It happens for so many of us. Growing older is not for the faint of heart. It's not like I'm ancient, but it's just not. Old hearts get broken every bit as easily as young ones, maybe more so. And sadly, there's not nearly as much time to mend a broken heart when you're older, which makes our ability to rest and recover even more urgent. Well, now I'm kind of cycling back to solitude, that thing that I mentioned at the top of the show. For me, that's critical. Now, remember, I'm introverted. Socializing drains me. not intimate conversation with close friends, not helping a person, not helping a couple in a very private way. Those give me energy. But putting on a, hi, how are you, face at some gathering, biggest beating of my life. Worse than any adversity. Far worse for me. And historically, the challenge has been managing the expectation, especially of judgmental people, and we've all got them in our life. And to better manage that, I just made up my mind a few years ago to not care. Now, I never did care that much, but I cared enough that I would do what was expected, mostly because it was important to mask the thinness of my armor. And over time, I just figured, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's not a person I care that much about anyway. And it certainly didn't matter to mask it more than it did to shore it up. I mean, come on, logically, that makes no sense to me. Mask the thinness of your armor and grind it down even further, doing something that drains what little energy you may have left, or forget about masking it altogether and just get on with rejuvenating so that you can recover. And I, at least intellectually, I opted mostly, not always, I opted for the latter. I still find myself surrendering to impositions that I would honestly rather avoid, but I'll just give you the phrase that kind of rules the day for me, playing nice, which is frankly quite easy because neglecting my armor is very easy. Stupid, foolish, wrong, but very easy. I'm much more prone to help you with your armor, all the while telling you that mine's fine, even though it may not be. I mean, these are proofs of how our strengths become our weaknesses. My energy levels, honestly, genuinely, go higher helping people with their armor. You can ask anybody who regularly engages with me. You can ask any of my friends, and they will tell you that 90 to 100% of our conversations are about them. And that, you know, no sooner do, I mean, if they even ask, I'm spinning the table around and saying, okay, well, enough about me. What about this? What about you? What about my energy levels go down. The reason I do this is not, I'm not self-deprecating. It looks like that, but I'm not. My energy levels go down. My energy levels go down, imposing on other people to help me with my own armor. Again, I told you, it's hypocrisy of sorts. I know it, but it is what it is. Our strengths can become our weaknesses. So first chore, know yourself. Know yourself. That's the absolute first commandment of resting and recovering. But secondly, act on it. Post haste. That is chore number two, and there's only two of them. The toughest one for me, personally, is act on it. I'm working on it. You know, mostly I do what's easy. You do too. What's easy for me, I retreat. Solitude is easy. Solitude is comfortable for me. Music, writing, these are the two common tools that have been part of my solitude my entire life. And until the internet was born, the writing was only in journals to myself. Well, I get, the only other exception I can think about were about 3 years of daily letter writing to Rhonda when we were dating and living 3 hours by car apart. My father's always remarked how he could sit and think of nothing, and he means it. I envy that talent. I do not have that skill. So I have to focus on channeling what I'm thinking about, and solitude helps. Yeah, some Benadryl can help too sometimes. The point? Do what you have to do. Do what you have to do to get your armor back into good battle-ready condition. It's too important to neglect. Self-preservation is not selfishness. I will repeat that. Self-preservation is not selfishness. Step three, okay, yeah, we're back to step one, endurance and survival. Now it's time to fight again because trouble has jumped out from behind that tree right there and blindsided you like Kato. The Pink Panther movies were still terrific. They were great. Kato, he come, you know, Spectre Clouseau's coming in. He's looking around. I mean, he knows Kato's there. He seems to be prepared. And he's, the very moment he lets his guard down, I mean, here comes Kato crashing through the wall or door. Or the one that got me was he had kind of a canopy bed, and Kato's hiding up in the canopy. And the minute he lays down, he jumps on him. It's life. It's the process that just begins all over again. But this time there's a difference, a big difference. You've seen this move before. Adversity has done this to you before. You have experienced the pain and the chokehold of this in the past. Yeah, maybe you're the long-haired galoot doing all the fancy kicking. You think he's going to do that again? Well, if he's an idiot, he will. And maybe he is. He kind of looks like an idiot. But if he's got any brains at all left from the knockout punch that he took, surely not. I mean, let's hope. Let's give the poor dude credit that maybe he did lean toward a little bit of wisdom and figured out, you know, all that showboating, didn't work out so well. So it is for you. You learned what you did poorly the last time. You ain't going to do that this time. It's going to be different this time. This time you're going to try a new maneuver. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't work. That's okay. It really doesn't matter, you know. What matters is you'll figure it out. The name of the game is to stay alive long enough to do that, to figure it out. And then you'll be able to rest once more. You just have to be tenacious. You got to be difficult to fight against. You want to be among the winners. In simple terms, the winners are the 10% who refuse to ring the bell, no matter what. They just don't give up. Babe Ruth said, it's hard to beat a person that never gives up. Well, the truth is, you can't beat a person that never gives up. And now you can think back about that Black Knight and Monty Python's Holy Grail. I mean, no matter that he couldn't protect the bridge anymore, no matter that his arms and his legs got chopped off, it didn't matter. He was still able to heckle King Arthur as he rode off to the sound of banging those two coconuts together. I mean, you kind of got to give it to the Black Knight. I mean, even in what seemed like sure defeat, he had the last laugh, and you will too. So when you're feeling down and out, jump up and shout, hey, hey. I mean, why not? Because none of us are going to get out of here alive anyway. So let's make it count. And let's have some fun at adversity's expense anyway. Yeah, I know they sound a little bit like the Rolling Stones, but they're not. It's a pod-safe track. The Rolling Stones, they opened in Chicago a new tour in 2019. You believe it? Mick and the boys. Talk about adversity and talk about some cats that look like they've been rode hard and put up wet. Man alive. They were first in Chicago in 1964. I mean, come on. You can't beat a person that won't quit. You can't beat a rock and roll band that won't quit, even though many people would say they probably should have years ago. That's it. You have just witnessed. I don't know how appealing it was. Maybe like looking at a train wreck. Episode 5030 of Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. I am proud to tell you that I am 83% of the way to achieving the Project Craving Encouragement and the Rode Rodecaster Pro. We'll see how it goes. Join the Facebook group. Please do that. Go to the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. Click the Facebook icon. It will take you there. It is a closed private group. I will let you in. I've only got one rule. Behave yourself, and I'll let you stay there. If you misbehave, we'll kick you out. We'll never let you back in again. It hasn't happened. I have rebuffed some people who wanted in and I didn't let them because it was obvious that they were phony accounts. But other than that, it's been cool. Just like you. Thanks for listening. I appreciate you. My name is Randy Cantrell. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio. Boy, as they say in the broadcasting game, that's hitting the post now. That is hitting the post. I'm going to give you a quick update on the Craving Encouragement thing. So if you didn't click stop, then hey, bonus content. Triple platinum bonus content, as they jokingly say. The Project Craving Encouragement is moving right along. Thanks to a number of you who have made contributions. You know who you are. I am going to probably wait until we get through July. There's so many vacations and stuff going on in the summer. It's just kind of difficult. I'm probably going to wait until we get to August before I kind of start doing some of the recordings and the stories. I'm really anxious to get going on that and to hear your stories of encouragement. If you want to learn more about this, the easiest way to do that is go to the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com, in the navigation. there is a tab that says support the podcast. It's actually not a tab, but, you know, it's navigation. Click it. Click support the podcast, and you will see a way to do it. Let me preface this by saying there's absolutely no money involved, necessarily. You can if you want to. It honestly doesn't matter. I still want your stories. I want your stories of encouragement. What these basically are, I'm looking for stories where you were encouraged by someone in a very meaningful way. So meaningful, it still stays with you. That's what I'm looking for. I'm giving away some Skype calls to people who are willing to donate, even more if you're willing to donate a little bit more. A 10-minute Skype call if you donate any amount at all. The ways to do that, again, are at the website. Just go to support the podcast navigation. If you donate $25 or more, and this goes toward putting a Rode Rodecaster Pro inside the Yellow Studio, $25 or more, I'm going to record a 30-minute recording with you. I'm not saying that I'm going to use 30 minutes, by the way, in the podcast. Somebody did ask that not long ago. It's a 30-minute Skype call with us. All I ask is that you, let's get out of the way. I want to know of a story when somebody really encouraged you in a meaningful way. I'm also willing to accept a story where you feel like you really encouraged somebody in a meaningful way. That sounds a little bit too self-serving, so my preference would be, let me hear about a time when somebody encouraged you. But I'm willing to listen to both. At any rate, you donate $25 or more, we're going to get on the Skype call together for 30 minutes. I don't care. We can talk about anything you want to. You can ask me anything you want to. And I would like permission to use these Skype calls, 10 minutes, any amount at all, $25 or more, a 30-minute call. I would like to use at least portions of the audio for the podcast. A number of people have said, I'm willing to help you out here, but I don't want to do that. I'm like, okay, then that's fine. Then email me your story. I'm gonna really ballyhoo this because some of the people who have asked haven't emailed me the story. I want the story. I want the story way more than I want your money. I appreciate the money, don't get me wrong, but I want the stories. That's what we're here for, these stories of encouragement. I'm calling this hashtag Craving Encouragement. That's the project. And yes, I do own that URL, cravingencouragement.com. Seems like maybe I've redirected that to Lean Toward Wisdom for now. I don't know what I'm going to do with that. I'll tell you really quickly. I've told this story before, so if you've heard it, you can click stop and bail out already. I've just sat in front of so many people, professional people mostly, and people who've got some oomph and power and achievement and all, and it's amazing how many of them, they will recite some story when it comes to encouragement that it was so long ago. So long ago, many of them when they were kids, and some of them, it was like the very first job, which was years ago. And when you ask them, as I do, well, let's talk about encouragement. What does that look like in your life today? You just get this blank stare. I mean, it's just like their eyes glaze over. What do you mean? I'm like, well, that's what I mean. When was the last time you got encouragement? Maybe better yet, as a corporate leader, which is largely who these cats are, when's the last time you gave any encouragement to anybody? And so, sadly, many of them can't remember. They can't remember. And I stumbled on the word quite by accident one day in a conversation, and I used the word crave. And I asked it as a question. I said, do you crave encouragement? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Don't we all? And I began to use that phrase and that phrasing, crave encouragement, craving encouragement. And I have yet to find a human being that can't relate to it. We can all relate to it, which begs the question, then why don't we do this more? We all know how powerful this is. We all understand it. We all get it. We've all got our stories when it happened to us. Why in the world aren't we passing this on? I don't have a good answer for it. So that's what Project Craving Encouragement is all about. So there you go. More than you wanted to know, I know, but there it is. See ya.